training camp's over. You guys practiced this morning. There was live hitting, Andy. That's a good thing, is it not?
Stepping it up, Jeff. Stepping it up.
Gentleman who will call all of the Browns preseason games that can be televised locally joins us right now on the fan hotline. He's with us all the time. We love him. He's our buddy Chris Rose. Hello, Chris. How are you, sir?
Hi, Christopher.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We are well. Practice was fun. We didn't get to watch too much of it because we're off to the side and people were standing in front of us. But we're told that they actually practiced tackling today, Chris. How about that in the NFL?
Good. Needs to be done.
Why do teams, injury obviously a reason, but there's got to be a balance to it too, Chris. Do teams tackle enough in this day and age, or do they err on the side of caution too much?
Yeah, I mean, watch the first month of the NFL. The tackling's horrible. There's a ton of scoring in the early going. Obviously, the weather is pristine, so that helps as well. But the tackling is horrific. There's very few teams that tackle to the ground in training camp. And, I mean, I get it. I understand it. You want as many healthy bodies. We found that out yesterday as
yep.
possible in week one. But, you know, it's an occupational hazard, and you can't get better by not tackling. I've never understood it in recent years, and I guess I do understand. I can answer my own question that these guys are so afraid of being the coach who cost, you know, themselves a valuable player because they hit too much during training camp. I mean, there's only 16 padded practices. That's not that much. 16 in order to get ready for the season.
All right, my friend, are you ready to play the quarterback game?
Sure.
All right. Where are we on the quarterback game? What do you think? With Pickett getting hurt this week, how much does that change the scenario?
Well, I can't imagine with a hamstring that, you know, I listened to Kevin's press conference today, and they were asking him about, well, will he be back Friday? And like Friday, God, that sounds early for a hamstring. I think Joe will be our starter week one against the Bengals. I think that would be exciting. I mean, I just worked. I did a 4-hour shift on Monday in the studio for NFL Network, where we take you to all the teams around the league. And I worked with David Carr, who was at Browns practice on Saturday. And he was telling me how much he enjoyed watching Joe Flacco throw the football. You know, this is a guy who, this is what he did for a living, right?
Right.
And he just said it, the ball just comes out of his hand different than a lot of players that have played the position. And it's fun to watch him. And he actually thinks, he and I were discussing about where we think the Browns could finish. And he was much more optimistic about them than some other people, I would say. So I think he's one, and then we'll see how the other guys shake it out. I think Dylan Gabriel could play great in the preseason. I think I told you this when they drafted him, that I really believe that like he's made for the preseason in terms of his how much football he's played and how good he was during the spring process that caught a lot of coaches' eyes. So wouldn't surprise me, and I can't wait to see Shador get out there. I just can't. I cannot wait.
That's what I mentioned earlier, Chris. The game against Carolina coming up, man, let's see these two young guys, especially on the football field. And it won't answer questions, but it'll certainly give everybody food for thought when it comes to both of them. If one of them's really good, obviously becomes the man that everybody starts clamoring for. And if one of them doesn't look good, people need to make sure they don't bury him. It's just NFL game number one, and doesn't even, you know, I mean, it's their first exposure. So, but I can't wait to see it, and I'm with you. I think Dylan Gabriel could be terrific because of the amount of football that he's played in college at the high level that he played in.
Yeah, and in pretty good conferences. So,
yep.
You know, we're all excited. You know, and that was the other thing that David said. He said the ball really comes out of his hand well. He said he's got a nice live arm. He said he was a little, he said a few of the reps that he got in with the ones, you could tell with Njoku and with Jerry Jeudy that he was a little amped up and he missed some throws. But you could see kind of what his process was and that his arm is really live. So he said the more comfortable he gets being put in that situation. And obviously he's going to get more reps with ones over the next however long, you know, Kenny Pickett's out, that that stuff will start to settle it down a little bit. But he liked what he saw out of him.
Chris, when I think fans sometimes go the wrong way. I don't know, wrong way is not probably not the right way. Like, perception versus reality, let's put it that way, when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. And I keep finding myself going back to watching DTR play for this team in the preseason and how excited I was to watch him, and then the reality when he got that start against the Ravens early in the season, and you're like, whoa. Like, when you what expectations do you think realistically fans should have for rookie quarterbacks, especially ones that aren't drafted in the first round?
I've gone over the numbers with you. The number of guys that are drafted outside of the first round in terms of since 2016, so this is almost a decade worth of data, there are only three non-first-round quarterbacks who have, I'm going to throw air quotes around them, made it. And it's Dak Prescott, it's Jalen Hurts, and it's Brock Purdy. Three of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the league, one of whom just won a Super Bowl, another whom who got on the precipice of doing it, and the other who has had a really good career in Dak, but obviously hasn't reached the heights that he had hoped as a team. But that's it. There are no other guys since 2016 that have done it. So the odds are stacked against them. And then when you throw in the physical height issue with Dylan Gabriel, then the number gets even smaller, no pun intended. So it's just, you have to know that going in, that the odds of it working are not great. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Doesn't mean it can't be us. You just have to understand it. And if you have that as your kind of your backbone and your structure going in, then whatever happens can either be, oh my God, did we luck into it? Like, it finally happened for us. Like, a guy who was drafted on day two or day three of the draft is our savior. We can have our guy, like New England had for two decades, or like Seattle had for a decade with Russell Wilson, or like Philly's got right now with Jalen Hurts. Like, it happened to us. Just don't expect it. That's all.
Chris, what do you think the early careers of Kyler Murray and Bryce Young say about short quarterbacks in today's NFL?
Well, you have to look at their situations, too. I mean, Carolina, it's been a
Carolina's
horrible
rough.
Down
he
there.
Played he played better when he came back last
he
year.
He totally played, but he really did play better. So,
yep.
You know, let's reserve judgment. The thing is that he looks, he's small, man.
Yeah, he's
so
guy.
Small. He's just frail. Kyler's different because he has the ability to extend plays that Bryce doesn't. And they've been a little all over the place as a franchise. Do I think that Kyler could be a Super Bowl quarterback? No, I don't. I don't see it. Can he be a guy that wins a lot of games? I think he can be and pops into the playoffs occasionally. But it's not my first choice. Yeah. If I'm building the team. Just not.
All right, Chris, let's switch gears. The baseball, the trade deadline coming up tomorrow. So we haven't had your reaction. I just want to hear what you think of the whole situation with Emmanuel Clase and how that affects where the organization had to make decisions this week or will be making decisions this week.
All right. I will not bring up the fact that I told you in the offseason we should have traded him. I'm not going to bring that up, okay?
Don't bring that up.
Or the last week you wanted to trade him to the Cubs.
Right, right.
Okay,
I will not
sure.
bring up those two things. Okay?
Okay.
So let's move on.
Champions Post.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I don't have any other information on what's going on, and I imagine the team doesn't either at all with what has transpired here. I don't believe that this is an organizational failure. I think these are, and once again, this is just an investigation, so we don't know what has happened. People can look on the internet and look at first pitches of innings, and they can have their own judgments. At this point, it's an investigation. But for people to think that teams, whether it's managers, GMs, or other teammates, know what's always going on in people's private lives, y'all have never set foot in a clubhouse. I'm just going to say that.
Right.
So let's not act like this is it. Oh, they've lost control. These guys need to be fired. No, that is not the way it's gone down. I can just tell you that. So let's stop with that BS right now. The other side of it is that this has screwed the organization. Emmanuel Clase was the most tradable commodity that made sense to trade, in my opinion, out of anything we have in the organization, and could have gotten a huge return because there are minimum of five teams that would kill for him right now to have him around. The Dodgers, the Cubs, the Phillies. I know we wouldn't trade him to the Tigers, but they could use him. I know there's some other huge team that I'm forgetting as well off the top of my head. But there would have been a ton of competition for his services. And now, Chris, we don't have that. Now we don't have that. And now we're all focusing on trading Stephen Kwan. Why?
Can I ask you this? Why? Why is his name out there as much as it is?
Because we don't sign guys to second contracts unless they're generational players like Jose Ramirez. And even that came down to the last minute, and it had to be a concession from him, right? I mean, if he didn't say, yes, I'll take severely under market value to stay in Cleveland because I love it here, then he would have been a San Diego Padre the next day. I'm not one of those people that will sit here and tell people how to spend their money because it's not fair. I mean, if I own a business, nobody can tell me how to spend money, but it's painful. And it sucks that we, as Guardians fans, as good as the organization has been over the last dozen years, because they have treated us to some memorable playoff runs, including one a year ago. But that is such a thin needle to thread to know that you're living on borrowed time with guys like Francisco Lindor and now Stephen Kwan. Pardon my French, but that is a you-know-what way to run your organization. You can't buy your kid a Stephen Kwan jersey because you're worried that with 2 years left of control that they're going to trade him? That's horrible. That is horrible. Because you're trying to find the next Stephen Kwan who doesn't become a free agent until 2031. I mean, that's the game you want to play? That's where we are with this? That is tough to stomach, and it is tough to sell to your fan base.
Do you think the Guardians are putting that out there, Chris, and that they're actually actively looking to trade him? Or is his name just being floated by media members like crazy because teams in a position to trade for a guy could use a guy with Steven's skills?
Well, there's also a real lack of position players that are available this year. It's unless there's people that are available that we don't know are available. Like a couple of years ago, remember when Max Scherzer got traded to the Dodgers and Trey Turner came along with him? We were like, whoa, Turner just got traded? So that one kind of surprised us. Kwan, people are trying to connect dots. Cleveland doesn't give second contracts out to good players. He'll only have 2 years of control left after this season. Teams are looking for a bat that can help them. There's few better guys that can control the strike zone than Stephen Kwan when he's at the plate. It's the connecting of the dots here. So I don't know.
Well, Chris, I thought you brought up a great point. Like, this franchise has been built to have players that are in Kwan's shoes right now. Control with arbitration over the next 2 years, and then you try to figure it out. That's why I think this one seems different. Like, if they let Kwan go, this isn't the way they've built things to be a winner, whether it's every other year or not, and how they've been consistent, is to have players like Kwan on this team. And I can't imagine, I wonder what they're asking then to let him go, because it kind of goes against everything they've been doing since John Hart's been here.
Guys, I love Stephen Kwan. I love watching him play baseball. I love him as a guy. I think he's got the perfect mentality of a major leaguer. He's got swag and confidence without being a jerk. He's a great baseball player on both sides of the ball. I just, guys, I would not get this one at all. And it would really piss me off. And I love this team. And I think we've done a lot of good things. I think in recent years, we've kind of been on the wrong side of trades, which has hurt a lot. We're going through something with a couple of pitchers that's unprecedented in the sport for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it's hard right now. And they are in if they trade Stephen Kwan, you can forget about it. Like the minute the Browns start playing games, which is next Friday night in Charlotte, I'll see you next spring training. And that is a real dangerous area for them to live in. I hope they don't. I really hope that 36 hours from now, Stephen Kwan is still a Cleveland Guardian, because that'll be a real kick in the onions.
I agree with you on that one completely, because I keep looking at those 2 years of team control, and I think, well, why? You know, why now? I don't get it.
Because I'll tell you why. Because they're desperate. They're desperate to give themselves more of a margin of error of failure. And they say, well, if we just traded for some guy who's got 5 years of control left, and we think he can turn into Stephen Kwan, instead of, we've already got Stephen Kwan, let's try and figure out a way so that he isn't our second best player. Maybe he's our fourth best player in the lineup. That's been the problem with this team, is that we haven't developed. We've got two everyday major leaguers in our lineup. The rest of the guys are okay and can get on hot streaks, but they shouldn't be getting 400 and 500 at bats in a year. Like Manzardo, I think, is on the precipice of it. I really do. I think he should be playing against lefties every day too. Don't get me started on that.
But thank you.
Yeah, we're limited, and so now we're kind of shooting shots at a wall and hoping it sticks. Not a great way to build your team.
Is Bieber here tomorrow night?
Really good.
You think Bieber's here tomorrow night?
That one's hard, because I don't know if I'm an opposing GM, if I can pull the trigger on a guy I haven't seen throw a major league pitch since last April. That's a tough one. But if it's strictly a let's save money over the last 2 months move by the Guardians, then yeah. If they don't care what they get back, because I don't think they can get much back for him.
I would agree with you on that one. Always a pleasure. We look forward. You're doing Friday's game, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there with Joe Thomas and Aditi Kinkabwala. We'll have all three of them. Cannot wait.
Ready to roll. I can't wait to hear you. Thanks, buddy. I saw Daryl walking around with his camera and his tripod. That's a strange look.
Oh, he should.
He's all over it. He does a great job.
He's always like that.
But it's strange.
He's an overachiever.
Well,
can we be honest?
It's strange seeing Daryl with all this stuff.
Is that a fair assessment? Mayor, he's an overachiever. He does more.
He goes
you
above
ask
and
him,
beyond, baby.
You ask him to make you a peanut butter sandwich, he will make you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, triple stacked with the finest peanut butter and the finest jelly surround. Straight from Orville, yes.
With peanut butter on both sides of the bread. So
whatever
the,
it takes,
so the
man.
Jelly doesn't
I gotta
get
tell
the
you,
bread
I,
all wet.
I've been making PB&J sandwiches.
Incorrectly?
Prior
Incorrectly.
To. No, I'm just the peanut butter on one side, jelly on the other.
Al Guyberger says, no, peanut butter on both sides of the bread, and then butter, jelly
really
in the middle.
I don't really care about
that way it'll
who
stay.
Is Al Guyberger? Who is
Al Guyberger shot the first 59 in a PGA Tour event, and I think he had diabetes.
Okay.
And so he used to make
PB. Way to turn this thing serious.
No, he used to make PB&Js so that he had a little boost during the round.
All right.
But he said to do it, you got to put the peanut butter on both sides. Because otherwise, the jelly soaks through the bread, and by the time you're ready to eat it, you have a mess.
We had a peanut butter jelly dilemma this morning, because I had two jars of peanut butter sitting there in front of me. And
must have been chunky. You
it was
like
either
chunky
or smooth.
You
Jeff,
don't like, you don't what like
did
chunky.
What'd you pick? What'd you pick?
I would pick chunky.
Mayor, what would you choose? Chunky or peanut butter or smooth?
We've been over this before. I told you it's whatever's. I love peanut butter in any form, so it really does not matter.
You would eat the chunky?
Yes.
Not a chunky peanut.
I love chunky peanut butter.
It's something about chunky peanut butter. I like peanuts, and I like smooth peanut butter, and I don't like chunky peanut butter. It's a box. It's
well,
a box.
You know where peanut butter is.
It is Andrew Siciliano's mayonnaise.
You know what form peanut butter is best in? Cookie form.
That I'll agree with you on
cookie
that.
Cookie form.
I give you that.
One of the Browns rookies met with the media today. And when Jeff Shadell was sitting here with us, Jeff was really interesting. We talked about Carson Schlesinger.
Yes.
When Andrew Siciliano sat down with us, Andrew in Los Angeles, saw Schlesinger at UCLA during his time there, where he played 3 years and started as a walk-on. Walk-on. And ends up being the first pick in the second round of the draft. It's a pretty big thing for him to come through. And now he's here. And to show what kind of a leap it is, Andy, first 2 years, okay, at UCLA, playing linebacker, Carson Schlesinger was in 2 years combined, in on 27 tackles.
Wow.
That was it. Last year, 136.
Hmm.
So, I mean, he jumped and became something quickly. Browns jump on him, first pick of the second round. And now he is going to be a main man in the defense without guys at his position. Here's what he had to say about coming into this defense when he was expecting maybe JOK, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, to be there. That's not happening. And then Jordan Hicks, probably one of the starters, retiring. And I here's Schlesinger.
I think it just creates a lot of opportunity for the whole room and rooms for guys to step up, whether on the field, in leadership roles, all those ways. And I think we've got a great room to be able to do that.
That makes sense. That's all well and good. But now all of a sudden, Andy, instead of having a couple of veterans there in JOK and Jordan Hicks, it's going to be on him and other guys out there who you weren't expecting to be out there.
Right. I think it's just a fantastic story more than anything else. And I thought the story was good just by the fact that he got drafted where he got drafted after only having, you know, one season and having an outstanding year last year. And that I can only imagine what the scouts saw in him, right? Because, I mean, even at UCLA, they were hesitant on him being out there the first couple seasons.
He had to jump off the page, Andy.
Right? Completely. And, like, something happened. And for him to be able to be there, and now we talk about him calling the plays on defense, a rookie, on a very veteran-laden defense.
Well,
I mean, now all of a sudden you're saying to the – and so, again, Andrew said wait till you talk to him. You'll understand exactly why we're going down this road. But, I mean, you want to talk about character, man. How does that happen?
Well, he goes from high school
right
to two nondescript years at UCLA where he's learning, and then – pops last year and is really good and is now in the National Football League. Here he is talking about the way he's feeling about this opportunity right now.
I think every day I come out here, I feel more comfortable. I think the big part of it is getting reps on the field and also in the film room, watching things I can correct, and then also watching the offense and seeing certain tendencies you're going to get that are different from college now and things like that.
Makes sense, and you're hearing what Andrew was talking about. When you listen to this guy, it sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
A guy that made the most out of special teams before.
He had to make his mark, didn't
yeah,
he?
And yeah. I think that's kind of – it gave him the opportunity to go from walk-on to special teams guy to All-American. And that story just isn't written that often. And, man, I hope it plays out to be great while he's here because it's – you know, that's what we are, man. We're a city – of great stories of guys who rise from the ashes to be able to find their way.
Rising from the ashes.
Find their way into national headlines. I love it. I hope this kid is everything that they believe he is, to enough so to say, hey, why don't you call the plays with the first team defense?
Rising from the ashes.
And I hope it works.
In NFL terminology, he has the green dot on the helmet. What does that mean? It means he's in communication with the coaches and will be getting the plays and then calling the plays in the huddle. Serious responsibility.
It's like calling him a captain out of college.
All of a sudden, you're throwing him out there. You're not going to do that, Andy, unless you've been impressed by the guy. And
no, you know, just knocked your socks off. He's in charge of the team on defense to make sure that everybody knows the plays.
It's usually a safety or a linebacker.
Yeah.
And Grant Delpit said, hey, I'll do it if you need me. And they're going to go with Schlesinger. Here's what he had to say about being in that situation, being the man with the dot.
For me, I just want to be prepared and ready to be able to do whatever they want me to do. And if that's what they're asking me to do, I got to be able to go out there and make sure that all the communication's good and we're able to run the defense how we want to run it.
Simple, direct, straightforward. Yep. That's good by him, and that's a good situation for him, an opportunity to step in and be really front and center in the National Football League, Andy, and at the linebacker spot on a team that's had a good defense each of the last 2 years and seems to be getting back to that. At least that's the goal, to get back to that. He's going to have to step up. He's going to have to be the. He's going to have to be one of the men on that defense.
Yeah, and again, we're talking about a team that doesn't have gigantic expectations. So here's your chance to jump off the page and be something really cool.
I wonder what happens with the linebacker spot, and that's part of the deal, is that you don't have JOK and JOK Pro Bowl talent, and you know, God willing, he's able to play football again. God willing, he's able to be okay again, you know, whatever that turns out to be.
Sure.
And then did Jordan Hicks' retirement catch everybody by surprise here in Berea? I don't know the answer to that. But all of a sudden you're in training camp and a guy decides he's had enough. And good for him. You know, he's a veteran, 33 years old. Maybe he got out here and thought, that's it, I'm done. I've reached the threshold of what I want to do here. But clearly, Andy, the defense that's based around that defensive line and some corners, and now with one of those down, they're going to need really solid linebacker play. I don't even think you need stellar linebacker play. If you're solid in the linebacking core.
Isn't that the NFL now, though, anyway?
Well,
solid. We talked about Clay Matthews
teams,
today.
Especially a team that has a good right? D-line.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're not – that linebacker
I'm not
play
for Clay,
isn't
– No.
No one is.
I wouldn't think.
Who is? What team is?
Well – that's a good question. Some teams might be more based around linebacker play than defensive line. Certainly not the case with this team. That's for darn sure. It's Baskin and Phelps at training camp. Trade deadline coming up. Oh, get ready. I'm just so curious to see what happens yesterday. Well, we'll touch on that as we wrap things up here from training camp.